Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the founder and editor of the Mark to Market website, as well as managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, what I want to do is spend some time in all three of the major economies from around the world that have different push and pull factors, but are all still very much connected. Let's start off with Europe. Europe, we continue to see weak economic data. The euro has struggled, although it hasn't truly fallen out of bed. It's still managing to bounce off some of its lower support levels. But again, the data that we have seen out of Europe for the last year now has been weak. And what we've started to see, which I think is even more important, is that the larger countries in the euro are struggling now more so than even some of the smaller ones. Please give us a little recap of what you're seeing in Europe and how the markets are taking it all.
Sure. So at the very end of last year, so the high frequency data cycle, Europe came reported weaker than expected purchasing managers index. And this is a new lows. And to your point, it's not simply sort of periphery like Italy as a problem. In fact, France seems to be a bigger problem right now. They've got this yellow vest protest against the Macron, the president, who's very unpopular. His support rating is about half of what it is for President Trump in the U.S. And so it's all dragging down France, but Germany's also been hit hard. And we saw that again at the start of this week with factory orders. What's happening is that Germany is export-driven, and slowing down of China, the slowing down of the U.S., the slowing down of Japan, we've seen much more weakness in the German export machine. And so bottom line here is that as the ECB has stopped buying bonds at exactly the wrong moment in time, because the economy is taking a hit. And what I suspect is going to happen is if this weakness persists into March and April, we'll see the ECB have to provide some extra monetary stimulus, not renewing their asset purchases, but giving the banks another shot in the arm, what they call targeted long-term refinancing operations. These are three-year loans given to banks to lend money to businesses. And so I think that out of the major centers, the Eurozone and Europe, with, remember, Brexit is still looming over us, Europe is the weakest out of the three big blocks.
Now, that's interesting that you think that the ECB essentially could start up a different form of a QE program again, because all the talk heading into the tail end of last year was the fact that they had stopped their QE program and they were considering rate hikes by mid next year. You think that the data just really is not going to let them do any of that, do you?
Exactly. And not only the growth data, but think about what's going to happen on prices. The drop in oil prices, even though oil prices have been stabilizing in the last, last week or so, the big drop in oil prices is going to spill over, and it's going to make headline CPI, headline inflation, headline producer prices much weaker. And it's also going to just give a sense of deflation coming to Europe after the ECB gets done buying their assets.
So, Mark, I haven't asked you this before, but if we just take a step back and look at the broader euro picture, do you see the euro continuing on as a currency in the, let's say, foreseeable future?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. Every so often people ask it as the existential issue sort of percolate to the surface. Yeah, I'm in the camp that thinks that, you know, in the 18th century, the U.S. was a great experiment. Could you have a representative form of government over a large territory? And the classic political philosopher said you couldn't do it. And so the U.S. experiment is a couple hundred years old now, and I think the experiment of our generation was taking place in Europe. Can you have monetary union without fiscal union or without political union? And I think that so far they can, but the question of how long they can go for it, how long will they need to have greater integration? And I think that the European project is still alive, and that the risk, though, is that the rise of nationalism starts to unravel some of the good. For example, the main opposition, or one of the big opposition parties in Germany, the AfD, that the Populist Party, that anti-immigration and been critical of the EU, they may, as they prepare for the May parliamentary elections, European parliamentary elections, they may take a stance to have to argue in favor of Germany leaving monetary union. So that it's not just the Greece or Italy, but this just changes the focus, I'd say. And I think that, but my way of thinking about it, though, is that Europe and the common currency is not really about economics. It's really what I'd say is an economic solution to what's a political problem. And that political problem is what to do with the United Germany. You know, Kissinger had it once. He said that you got to pity Germany. Too big for Europe and too small for the world. I'm the kind of guy that thought that I liked Germany so much. Thank God there were two of them. And, you know, this we're still dealing with what does this mean to have a united Germany and it dominates Europe. And so I think that my sense is that the euro was meant to keep Germany and its future tied to the prosperity of rest of Europe. And so I think that without that, there's an article in the Foreign Affairs just on the eve of the birth of the euro, where a famous U.S. economist argued that he wasn't really in favor of the euro. He said, but if it were to collapse, there could be war in the European continent again. You know, we are among the first generations in four or five that haven't seen a major war on the European continent. And it might have something to do with the economic and financial integration in Europe.
Huh, it very well might. That's a good point. But again, we are seeing a lot of weakness, and a lot of people are saying that this euro experiment cannot go on forever. But you know what? It does keep on kind of moving along. So we'll see if that does continue. Let's now also talk about China. Last week, China introduced more or less a new stimulus package by cutting reserve requirements that in their hope will help support their market, which has fallen into very much bear market territory. We also have some China-US trade talks underway. Do you think that's what China really needs, is some sort of agreement between the US and China in terms of trade to get their economy back on track, or is that not even going to be enough?
Yes, I think that China has two weaknesses. One's domestic and one's the foreign. The domestic weakness, I mean, you can see this from what Apple reported last week about unexpected drop in smartphone demand. And you see this in some of the other numbers from China. It's not just a lack of foreign or pressure from foreign, you know, the exports, but from domestic demand as well. So I think you're right. China did cut the reserve requirements, and I think we should expect more stimulus from China and a number of different fronts. For example, they just announced about $120 billion railroad infrastructure program. They're cutting taxes. They're cutting tariffs, not on U.S. goods, perhaps, but on other goods, as they seek to have new sort of substitutes for U.S. demand as well as sources for U.S. supply inputs into China. So I think China is stimulating their economy. Some of the economic data still is coming in weak. They haven't turned the corner yet, but I would expect them to continue to, like, it's almost like a sort of drip, drip, drip of these new measures that I do think will take hold in the economy. I mean, it is still a command type of economy, and so sort of what the Communist Party wants, the Communist Party gets.
That is very true, and that's one thing to consider when you're seeing any data out of China, is that the government very much has their hand in that data. Do you think that we have seen, though, a shift in the positive direction, at least in China's eyes, to more of a middle class? That's something that they have even said, and that a lot of commentators have said that's what they're working towards. But do you see that happening?
Yes, I think it's a rise of the middle class. I think that's what China is creating. Besides making widgets and computers and cell phones and this and that, China is also creating a middle class. And I think that for many of us in the West, the question is, will the middle class be happy with economic freedom, or will they want to secure political freedom and the sort of civil liberties that we enjoy in the West? And I think that's sort of an open question right now. But I do think China is very reform-minded, and even though it's not a democracy, it does seem that the government in China is as committed to creating a sort of a prosperous middle class as they are in any Western country.
All right, let's move over to the U.S. now, because last Friday we saw some jobs data that was very good, almost across the board. It was positive for the U.S. economy. This is all happening in the context of when everyone's looking at again, flattening yield curve. Still has not inverted. It does, the 2 to 10 year spread keeps on getting saved in about the teens, and right now it's right around the high teen level. What do you think about the overall health of the U.S. economy? A lot of people are talking recession. Do you agree with those comments?
You know, I think it feels horrible that the economy is going from, say, 4.2% in Q2 of last year to maybe something closer to 2.5%. It feels bad, but this is just a slowdown. I don't think it's really recessionary. Now, I think reasonable people differ. I think J.P. Morgan just increased their estimate of a recession in the U.S. to, I think, 60%. I know other people are around 50%. Bloomberg had done a survey. They do a monthly survey. They have it at only 20%. I still don't, if a recession, if we define a recession as two consecutive quarters of contraction, I just don't see which two there'll be. I think that the economy, from the jobs data, I think we know the economy might not be, it was a very strong jobs report. It was, earnings growth was solid, hours worked was strong, but we know it probably was an outlier. The U.S. is not creating so many jobs on a sustained basis in a month. So we should expect some moderation there. But generally speaking, I think the economy is growing probably a little bit above trend. And that, I think, is the importance of what Powell said on Friday in that interview with Yellen and Bernanke, is that he said the Fed can be patient. And I think what the Fed means by that right now is they're not going to raise rates, not in March. They might not raise rates in June, but I think they'll raise rates somewhere around the middle of the year. Patience means there's not an immediate rate hike. But he did not change the general thrust of what the Federal Reserve told us in December. And in December, they told us they expect the economy to moderate, but still be growing above trend, expects interest rates, that they would have to raise interest rates twice this year, and continue to unwind the balance sheet. I don't see that changing. I don't see anything Powell said to make it sound like that view has changed yet. It could change in March, but so far the data we have, I'd say probably not unlikely to change at this point. So I'm more sanguine about the stock, about the U.S. economy, thinking it's slowing down towards a more sustainable pace. There are some late cycle activity, like the housing market's been soft. But I think the pattern we're going to see, and partly it's been interrupted by the government shutdown, which is not going to release all the data in a timely fashion. But the general pattern is, yes, the economy was weak in October. It looked like it bounced back in November. Now, some of the purchasing manager indexes, or regional Fed surveys, manufacturing for December softened. And there were some, we did see a big drop in the U.S. ISM, manufacturing ISM. But there's also pockets of strength within that, including new export orders. And so I think that we'll be seeing the U.S. economy over the next 6 months still growing up above trend. And I think that what will happen is the market has taken out any chance of a Fed hike in the first half of the year. And I think that, excuse me, the whole year, before the U.S. jobs data, the market was pricing in about a 1 in 5 chance, 1 in 6 chance of a rate cut here in Q1. And I think that those ideas, I think, are just too extreme.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see just how flipped everybody has become just in the last about 4 months. And of course, that is all on market volatility and weakness. But something that Powell, I think, does keep trying to drive home is that, yes, they are dependent, but they're not locked into any certain path. However, don't be expecting rate cuts right away. There's going to need to be a lot more weakness in the U.S. economy and in the markets. However, to summarize, though, it sounds like you see pockets of strength, pockets of weakness, and on a net basis, the U.S. economy still, as you said, growing above trend. Overall, though, it's not a smooth picture, is it? It just seems to be that the U.S. economy is one of the best of a whole bunch of crappy large economies around the world.
Yeah, I'd say the U.S. right now, maybe the driest towel in Iraq. The U.S. obviously has problems. The government is shut down. It looks like one of the longest shutdowns we've experienced. So that means fiscal policy and political paralysis is a problem. I think that in the short run, we might see the dollar be weaker. But if this was a big game of poker, I still would rather have U.S. cards than China or Europe's.
All right, there you have it from Mark Chandler. Mark, it's always great having you on the show, and some of your comments about what's going on around the world do need to be taken very noteworthy, because it is a global game that we're all watching. And right now, as much as people want to get pessimistic on the U.S., there's a lot more pessimism in a number of the other large economies around the world. Thanks for your time today, Mark.
Thanks. Good luck, everybody.